Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney on a Champions League Wednesday. What's up, brother?
They're the busiest Wednesdays, aren't they?
Yes, they really are. Because we still have a lot to get to that happened over the weekend. And we've got Champions League stuff to talk about. And we have what to watch for looking ahead to the next weekend. So this is... Buckle in. This is going to be a bumpy one.
It's going to be a great podcast. Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. And we've got a good mailbag, too.
You have told me none of what's in that mailbag. I always enjoy having to think on my feet. It's a real strength of mine.
Some of these are statements. Some of these are comments. Some of these are stuff that you're ready to go on.
By the way, I meant to mention to you, and I promise we will talk about Champions League in just a sec. Barcelona and United only wrapped up, and Juve Ajax only wrapped up a short while ago. So it's almost like a reactionary podcast. But I meant to say to you, here I was the other night. I thought I was being such a good friend. I started a new show on Netflix called The Rebellion, which I thought would be of interest to you.
Oh.
And your response to me just was so smug and dismissive.
I said
to you, hey, this show, it's about like the uprising in Ireland on Netflix. It feels like it might be something. I hadn't even really started it yet. It was like the credits, but I was like excited.
The 1916
yeah,
Rising.
But I was excited to tell you about
it.
And
by the way,
your response was... Half of it is fair. You said it didn't get great reviews from what I heard. But then your other half of the response was, plus, it's a subject that I know so much about already that it almost seems silly to even watch it.
Like, that's
what
not
an
even.
Arrogant.
Like, well, here's the thing. Who are you? Who are you to start lying about stuff? I did not say that.
Let me find your
reviews. What I said was the characters are fictitious.
Okay.
These characters did not exist.
Okay.
However, we know so much about the characters, the actual protagonists of the Easter Rising, which is coming up upon us very soon, the anniversary. We know so much about it. Why would you make up people? It's ridiculous. It's like Benedict Arnold. We have Benedict Arnold's diary, and we create a guy called Benedict Darnold, right? And we just talk about him, and we make up him. It's ridiculous. These characters... We have their writings. It's only 100 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So we have enough to go on.
No, I went to the museum at the prison in Dublin.
Kilmainham Jail.
Yeah.
So I wasn't being smug. I was just saying...
But you still...
I felt like you were condescending.
I thought I would get a, oh, thank you. I didn't hear much, but maybe I'll give it a shot. But instead I got a, why would I even waste my time? Thank you very much. I'll go back to doing what I was doing and delete these messages.
I also have a degree in history.
Oh, yeah. But that's not supposed to be smug.
No. And in Ireland, you study that period in a lot of detail.
No one's accusing you of not knowing your history. I just thought maybe it would be an interesting thing, because you know a lot about it, to kind of add some color to it and watch the show.
I don't need the Melrose Place of Irish history.
I knew a ton about like the Battle of the Bulge and all that, but Band of Brothers was still fascinating to me. And those were real characters, but even if they weren't, even if it was fictitious characters that they put in there, that show still would have been amazing. Now, some of the bad review stuff that people want to say about it, that's another story. But your reasons had nothing to do with that.
Listen,
it had to do with your knowledge being far superior to whoever wrote and directed the show.
It's not even true.
I'm a few in.
You love painting this narrative as me as just a smug.
It's not hard work.
Dismissive. And it's not fair. By the way, we're going to get bad reviews if we don't get onto the Champions League.
Let's start with today's games because they are probably what's most fresh in people's minds. And we'll start with the Barcelona-Manchester United match. 1-0 it ends to Barcelona. An own goal from Luke Shaw. And look, I'm sure VAR will come up several times throughout this podcast. I'll get this out of the way quickly on that VAR decision.
There was no need for VAR.
Well, there was, because they ruled it offside and it wasn't. So thankfully VAR was there.
Yeah, but
otherwise,
where was he seeing the offsides?
I don't know, but he did. And hence why VAR is important, because that would have been egregious if that ended 0-0 in Barcelona. I would say that was a moment where I was like, it's a good thing VAR exists, because that would have been wrong. There's other moments we'll talk about later on.
Yeah, sure.
I guess here's my overarching question with this one, because you're kind of seeing some mixed stuff from pundits afterwards about United getting out of this with 1-0. And you're kind of getting the sense of, you know, that was something for United to feel good about. I don't know, man. That's not necessarily the way I feel, because I don't think that Barcelona played their best game, and yet they're still leaving Manchester United, Old Trafford, with a win heading back to their home in Spain. So I don't know if I'm Manchester United. I almost feel like it's a missed opportunity. Here we had Barcelona in our house and they didn't play their best game and they still beat us. Like that's, I don't know if I'd be feeling so good if I were a United fan right about now.
I agree with you. I spoke to a Manchester United friend of mine who is of your opinion. He was kind of angry at the pundits that he was hearing about, oh, strong performance, still in it. Well, of course.
It's almost like patronizing of United.
It really was. Guys, they didn't have a shot on target.
Yeah.
And what he said to me was, JJ, can you think of a time when Ter Stegen went full stretch? No. I can't. I remember him coming for a cross and punching. And that's not to say United didn't have pressure, but they did not create an awful lot of chances.
No.
Which was... what was interesting, and I suppose where all this is coming from, is that the first 10 minutes, where 15 minutes, 16 minutes, we'll say, where United had 10% possession, according to some of these websites that track this kind of thing, 10%. And when Barcelona scored early, I guess people thought this could be a shellacking.
Right.
United are sitting back, they're going to get destroyed. And the fact that United responded and actually had a nice period around the 26th to 35th minute of their own, I guess people thought, oh, you know, this isn't so bad. The fact Barcelona didn't score a second, but if you look at the chances, the Jordi Alba chance, Suarez had a chance, you know, this could, Coutinho had that foot save from David De Gea, this could have been a lot worse for United. And you're right. This is to damn them with faint praise to say that this was some great performance. Look at the Spanish pundits. Look at what Dermot Corrigan is tweeting. Dermot Corrigan said this is the worst Barcelona performance in some period of time.
Right. That's not good that could be said about them, and they still went on the road and won a Champions League quarterfinal match.
Yeah.
Like, that's a problem for Manchester United. I don't know. Maybe there's just this feeling among not necessarily United support, but... like the people who have watched and analyzed United this season, that just like, you know, look, they're not even supposed to be here right now. This was a transitional year for them. They've changed managers. They were down to PSG. It took a minor miracle for them to get out of that. Like, just the fact, like, okay, they did lose to Barcelona at home, but it was only 1-0. So here we are with United going to the second leg at the Camp Nou, and United is still, like, they're still in it. Yeah, I wouldn't pick them, but they're going into Barcelona with a real chance.
But Andrew,
so maybe that's enough to some people.
Andrew, that's the playing with house money
yes,
analysis
exactly.
of it. Fine, and I can accept that. They shouldn't be where they are. But we're being told about Ole at the wheel. That's the context. And what is he constantly banging on about? Fergie-style football. And that was not Fergie-style football tonight. Maybe it was latter days Fergie when he realised that he couldn't play the swashbuckling style of 99. Certainly wasn't the spirit of 99. It was, look how many players. I thought, if you look at some of the players that I thought had decent outings, I thought Fred had a decent outing, but it was all kind of invention and hard work. I thought Smalling was decent in that he battled and tried to remove part of Messi's jaw.
Oh.
Look, yeah. Unfairly. By the way, I defend him on that tackle. He was clearly eyes on the ball, trying to win the ball.
Well, the blood was that because he drew blood from Messi, but that was caused not by the initial tackle, but when his arm swung back around,
yes.
and hit him like as he was kind of making like a running motion. Look, yeah, it was very physical, but that's kind of what you have to do with him.
Actually, well, you got to get in front of the ball as well. You don't want him turning there with acres of space behind you and being a foot race with Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying the referee couldn't have given a foul for it. Sure, he could. But in that first half, you could definitely have seen certainly that United, if Barca were going to score, it was going to be because of some, excuse me, if United were going to score, it was going to be because of some Barcelona mistake.
Yeah, they had a couple free kicks from dangerous spots.
But, I
remember Rashford had one that was a decent attempt.
He whizzed one past the post early on. It was the first attempt. But yeah, it's all in the context of this new era now that we're talking about. And I don't know. It was very flat.
Yeah, and look, for all the criticism that Barcelona seemed to be getting in victory, it's funny, there were still moments in the second half where it just, like, it felt like the goal was coming. And maybe that is why there's some positivity around United, because it never did. And I can't be the only one that felt that. There were these moments where I was like, okay, now Barcelona are starting to look like Barcelona. That goal is going to happen. Suarez put one into the side netting.
Yeah.
They went through a patch where it was, you know, tiki-taka, the quick passing, movement, getting opportunities. And the goal never came. But there were still moments where I was like, okay, this is, like, they are, I still do see Barcelona out there.
Yeah, and I suppose the second half substitutions, Valverde was like, 1-0 is good enough here, guys. Let's get these back to the Nou Camp. And he brings on Arturo Vidal. And they sit back much deeper. When United had a lot of the possession in the second half, it's because Barcelona let them have it.
Yeah. So how would you feel going back to the second leg for this one?
I think Barcelona are going to go through. You need players like Pogba to step up as well. You can't be that anonymous and be such a key creative force.
Yeah, I know. Scott McTominay was probably their best player today. Almost drew a penalty.
Fred Smalling, guys like that. You need your creative forces on fire. By the way, Pique, the one United chance towards the end in the second half where Pique slid in and whipped the ball away from the oncoming Martial, I believe it was. He was imperious at times tonight. He wasn't tested, but there was a foot race in the second half where you're thinking 30-something Pique against Rashford. This isn't going to be good.
Right.
It was a standing start for Pique, and he completely burned him and was in total control. He is a fabulous defender, and we don't talk enough about how good he is.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's see, JJ. We go on to the other game from earlier today. Ajax 1, Juventus 1. And if you didn't watch it...
Which, unfortunately, a lot of people didn't because...
No, look, when it's up against United Barcelona,
it's going to struggle.
That's a truly glamorous fixture. So... You can't be shocked by that.
Would it not have been nice for one of the Turner family channels to put both games on?
Would have been nice.
Wouldn't it?
Well, you know what they're trying to do. They're trying to drive people to the app, right?
Yep.
This one, I'll tell you what, man. Like, boy, Ajax look like the real deal. Juventus are leaving Amsterdam feeling fortunate, I would imagine.
Feeling
that,
great.
That was 1-1. I mean, they're kind of in the driver's seat. They got the away goal. But Ajax were just firing opportunity after opportunity, both in the first half and the second half.
By the way, Hakim Ziyech, he loves a shot from distance, doesn't he?
He was so close. Bent it just barely around the outside of the post.
19 shots in total to Juventus's 7. 6 shots on target. 1 shot on target for Juventus. Like, Ajax dominated this game. And this reminds me a little bit of the first leg of the Real Madrid game where they did the same thing and Madrid got lucky coming out of it. So this one is really in the balance. And Ajax can be confident that they can go to Turin and win.
Yeah. The fun thing about this game is that, you know, you mentioned the shot figures there. I will give Juventus some credit, and this applies to both teams in this game. There weren't a lot of half chances. Like, there were a lot of legitimate scoring chances for both teams. It's interesting that it only ended 1-1. The finishing maybe wasn't quite there, but, you know, while Ajax may have had the bulk of them, you had Douglas Costa, who went on a great run late and hit the post. You had Bernadeschi, who had an amazing turn, which when you watched it in real time, you thought, oh, he just put it wide, but it was actually deflected. Mm. Great deflection. I don't remember who the Ajax defender was. So there were... There were great opportunities for both teams, and the goal scored by Juventus, just Ronaldo bursting down the center of the pitch, and for like he's not even shedding defenders.
No,
it's like this like magnetic pulse. You know how like two magnets opposites attract, like they push each other away if it's like the same. You know,
it's a superb ball stood up right into the space where he's going to attack.
Yeah,
and boy does he attack it well, and it just flies into the net. And it's a classic Ronaldo goal. And I think, was it, whoever was on co-commentary with Jonathan Pearce said this is the kind of goal that Ronaldo, in the second stage of his career, has been, it's almost his trademark. But by the way, Ajax responded early in the second half with a brilliant goal by Neres, who was, he's one of those bunch of players that, when we look back on this Ajax team, we'll think, oh, he started out there, he was brilliant there, and they're going to obviously spread their wings and fly around Europe because that's the way the money works.
No, this honestly, I hate to say this because it really would be fun to just watch them stay together and watch this like Ajax revolution take place, but you just, like, I can't help but watch them and feel like, well, this is Monaco from a couple years ago.
Yeah, or Ajax from 22 years ago because they went to the final in 95, won. Went to the final in 96 and were beaten by who? Juve. And that, you don't want to look at that Ajax team because it would make you cry. They could have dominated Europe for years to come, but Italian teams came in and bought those players. Same thing's going to happen now.
Yeah. It's already started with this Ajax-Barcelona partnership that you talked about last week. So unfortunate for Ajax. I really believe that it ended 1-1. boy, was the crowd up for it too, as you would expect. It was a great atmosphere. And, you know, I wanted to go back to something you just said about Ronaldo and the commentary talking about this is like the classic goal from this stage of his career. Yes, that is true. He has changed. And, you know, the goals that he scores with his head now are, it's become almost commonplace. But I hope people don't read into that, that he's like Vince Carter in the NBA. You know, he used to score because he'd get through the lane and dunk on anybody. Then later in his career, less athletic, became a three-point shooter. That to me is not Ronaldo. Like, I still do believe every time he sets foot out on the field, he's among the best athletes in the game. I think he's just become maybe a little smarter in how he goes about things. Like, you know, the speed, like the afterburners that he put on to even put himself in position to score that goal. I really do think he's still a tremendous athlete. He just finds different ways to score than necessarily dribbling around people. You know, he kind of runs into spaces maybe in a way that he, without the ball, that maybe
yeah,
he didn't
that's fair.
Previously.
I think he takes up better positions to score. He's more of a center forward now. It's as simple as that, where he was a wide player for the most part of his career.
And this one for the second leg, what do you think? Juve with that away goal, like I mentioned, so you have to say that the advantage is in their favor, especially going home.
Oh, it's hard to bet against Juve and Ronaldo at home. But you know what? I will, just for the fun of it. I think this Ajax team is going to go to the semi-final, and we shall remember them.
Well, I think they've already done enough to be remembered.
You've got to remember that.
They beat Real Madrid.
I'm aware of that. But this is Ajax, and their history demands that they do a little bit better than the quarterfinals, and I think they'll be in a semifinal.
I was not monitoring Juve's Twitter. Was there another pump-up video release, maybe this one in Chinese?
Yeah, no, didn't see one. Okay. Did not see one, but Ajax released something very tasty in Dutch, a lot of Dutch language in it, with a dance tune, which is in keeping with the Dutch culture. They love their dance music.
They love to dance.
Yeah, Armin van Buuren.
Oh, yeah.
Who is a DJ, commented on it. Now, don't know if it was his song.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure. Blah, blah, blah. Not sure.
Yeah. But what was it a commentary of all the people saying that they were going to lose, that they don't belong here? Like the whole beginning of it with the blah, 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 blah.
Kind of
blah,
stuff
blah, blah.
Like that. Everybody kind of writing them off or whatever. Yeah. And just a montage of them taking people down.
They're legit good.
They are very good.
Yeah. I would tell anybody who focused today on the United-Barcelona game, at least do yourself the favor of going back and watching the highlights, because you'll be impressed.
They're a fun sight, and I look forward to seeing Ziyech at Anfield next season.
Let's see. We go now to Tuesday's games. We'll start, JJ, at the new White Hart Lane with Tottenham and Manchester City, and
have
it's
1-0. Have you guys got a new stadium, Andrew?
And it's 1-0 to Spurs. Here's how it sounded, JJ.
Son's on the move. Eriksen picks him out. They stayed in. And Son still goes. And Son's found a way to score somehow.
Oh, boy. When he's on form, oh, my God, is he good.
It's not fair to say that ball stayed in. He kept it in.
It was close. He did everything he could, and it worked. Several different talking points for me from this one, and we'll kind of run through them, I guess, bang, bang, bang.
Okay.
The first one, I hate to start with the negative on a game like this, but it's kind of the big thing to come out of it, and it is the fact that once again, Harry Kane does his ankle, and this one looked, none of them looked good, but this one looked bad. Fabian Delf standing on Kane's ankle, that it kind of turns under Delf's foot, and I don't necessarily mean to vilify Delf in saying that. I don't believe there was anything dirty about this play. I really think it was just bad luck. Kane leaving his leg in just at like the wrong time as Delph was finishing the follow-through
ball. But it was in keeping with the intensity and physicality that Spurs were bringing to the game.
Well, yeah, and there were other moments where Kane dealt with challenges that I thought were dirty, like mainly from Fernandinho, when he made sure to land as hard as he could on Harry Kane and then made sure to put his elbow into the back of Kane's head.
I'm not sure who tweeted this, forgive me, but Mark Van Bommel apparently had a great method of tackling and tackling and tackling, and 10 tackles in when he should have had at least 2 yellow cards and be sitting on the bench, he was still tackling without his first yellow card. And apparently Fernandinho did a Van Bommel there last night.
Yeah, it was, and Kane responded. I mean, he kind of like threw an elbow back at Fernandinho. Yeah, it was that kind of game with two teams that know each other very well. Now, the question with the Kane injury, because Pochettino is talking about how it could be a season ender. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, that's been announced. But at this point, we still don't know what the deal is. But the question is whether or not they can survive it.
Well, the stats say Tottenham 2018-19 with Kane played 39, 124, 62%. Tottenham 2018-19 without Kane played 9, 16, 66%. I think Spurs can survive. I think they can rejig that attack with Moura and Son and still be potent. I'm pretty confident of that. However, this for me, Andrew, isn't about Spurs surviving, but rather Harry Kane surviving. Off the top of my head, I think, and you can correct me, you'd know, this is the fifth time he's been out injured since 2016, and the majority of them being ankle-related.
And this is the same ankle that he injured earlier this season.
Right. So I don't, personally, I don't know if he's got enough rest and rehabilitation. Certainly didn't last summer, because the World Cup was a case in point. He was in a rush to get back for that. I think, don't roll your eyes, I'm looking at a purely player welfare standpoint. Yeah. I think there's a good argument for his long-term health in the game to shut him down and get some rest. He's going to get an opportunity this summer. He doesn't have to play for England in those qualifiers before the break. And the case of Marco van Basten comes to my mind. Andrew, he had persistent ankle problems as well. He had to retire at 30 and was effectively not really playing at 28. You don't want that to happen.
Here's the thing. You're right. I can't go against what you're saying. Like, we've now seen enough ankle issues with him where you can look at that and say, okay, this is a thing now.
It's almost chronic, you would say.
But here's the deal. He's so good. And so Tottenham right now, they're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
Yes.
And they're in a fight for their lives to qualify for next year's Champions League.
And
if he can play...
Oh, no.
He will. If he's healthy enough to play, you're right. For the sake of long term, maybe it would be smarter to do that. But for what he means to them, I just can't envision a scenario where if he could go, they'll tell him not to. That's just hard for me to fathom.
I can see why they're going to want to... By the way, I got to choose my words carefully. Not for one second am I thinking that the Spurs medical staff are going to do anything to harm him. I am not suggesting that. But he wants to play all the time. And never mind the injuries, Andrew, his playing load is up there. He really wants to play every minute that he possibly can, including coming on in the FA Cup against Tranmere. Which...
Right.
Right. So you're right. There will be an impetus and a driving force pushing himself and the manager to play him. But I don't think that they should. They really need to address this now. And if the manager is talking about him being out for the season and he comes back in 3 weeks' time, that's really concerning for me.
On the idea of how they can do without him, like you mentioned, they've done well this season when he was not able to play. And specifically, the goal scorer, Kane got hurt, and then Son scored that goal for them. Mark Ogden reminded us of this. He wrote at ESPN FC, when Kane was sidelined with another ankle injury earlier this year, Son scored in four successive matches for Pochettino's team before then going six without a goal once Kane was back playing again.
I still think they can be potent. Son has an eye for goal. We've seen that. Lucas Moura can score as well. They can rejig that line with Dele Alli as well to be a potent attacking three. I'm not... massively, he's such an amazing player that for me to say, oh, Kane won't be
no,
a miss.
Right.
He will be a miss.
We have to go out of our way to say we're not saying that Tottenham are better without him.
No.
But, that's crazy.
But the question was, can they survive? And I believe they can.
Yeah. Now, they were 4-for-4 in the league, 4 wins when he was hurt, and they beat Dortmund in the Champions League 3-0. So, yeah, I think they've already kind of answered if they can. We move from that, JJ, to the moment of controversy early in the match. Who was it for Manchester City? Aguero, was it, that took the shot?
Sterling.
Or Sterling. Yeah, he cut in, took the shot.
Yes.
It was blocked by Danny Rose. No one from either team, obviously Tottenham wouldn't react, but no one from Manchester City reacted.
Oh, there was a reaction. The reaction was, it's a corner.
Right, right. I mean, no one reacted in the way that something nefarious had happened.
No.
And then all of a sudden the referee has stopped the game, and now it's a VAR decision. And now it's a handball against Danny Rose, and he's stunned. Like, the look on his face was just, couldn't even, because it felt like this is following the Tottenham script. Like, you know, some odd thing is now going to happen that is going to cause their ultimate demise in this competition. But then Hugo Lloris came up huge. Boy, I feel bad after some of the things we were saying about him only a couple weeks ago.
I'd expect him and most goalkeepers to save that penalty. It was at a nice height.
Yes.
It was telegraphed in his body shape. And Hugo Lloris did what a World Cup winning goalkeeper should do, and he saved it.
He's saved three straight penalties now
in
all huge moments. Against Leicester, against Vardy,
yeah.
against Arsenal in the 1-1 against Aubameyang, and now this one in a 1-0 win in the Champions League against Aguero. But the handball on Danny Rose. Now,
it's not a handball, Andrew. It's just not. Okay, and by the way, it's not what VAR was... Let's get into this. It's not what VAR was meant for. It's not clear and obvious. But what we can know and deduce from this now, and what we've seen in the Champions League, that every instance will now be reviewed. And as Rory Smith pointed out, they'll adjudicate, rightly or wrongly, whether they were handball. But that's not the way it was meant to be.
Yeah, I think the problem... I don't think there's any single call that has been more affected by the implementation of VAR than handballs in the box. Because I think that, almost more than anything, when you slow it down, is deceptive into how intentional or unintentional it may be. I think in slow motion...
Now, we're also, can I just say, we're in the midst of a rewrite of the handball rule, which we need.
Well, these are UEFA's guidelines for a handball. It says in their handbook here, when deciding if it's a handball, three magic things must be considered. One, the movement of the hand towards the ball and not the ball towards the hand. Two, the distance between the opponent and the ball. Was it unexpected? And three, the position of the hand. Just because it's away from the body doesn't mean there's an offense.
Right.
Which, to me, if you look at two and three, they're the distance between the opponent and the ball. Danny Rose was almost on the play. Like, how many yards could have possibly been between him and Sterling when that shot was taken? Three? Four?
Okay.
And then, yes, Rose's hand is away from his body.
And look,
but
look,
if you're diving into a play, is that not a natural or unnatural position? I don't know, man. The problem is, for handball, everyone has their own definition of these things.
Well, now we're going to hopefully get something at least a little bit clearer from the IFAB, because we need to.
We really do, because I've said this now about VAR, that it's very useful for objective decisions. Was he offside? Did the ball go over the line? Things like that. Did a player dive or was he tripped? But like, this stuff with handball, I've said it before, this is like what is and isn't a catch in the NFL. Like, no one seems to know. You look at what happened with Trent Alexander-Arnold in the Liverpool game, and you look at what happened with Danny Rose in the Tottenham game. One is a handball and one's not. Like, this is so subjective now. Replay is not helping in these situations with what is or is not a handball. They have to go back and refigure this out, or at least like recalibrate their minds of what a handball looks like in slow motion and what is or isn't intentional.
And also, you need to go back and recalibrate your mind as to why you brought VAR in and what VAR is for. It can't be for these things. Before you get into that, Pep Guardiola pointed out that, oh well, the handball against Schalke against us wasn't a handball. Correct. The PSG handball against Manchester United wasn't a handball either. These are three cases where we've seen it now in quick succession in the Champions League.
I'm almost wondering if you just have to make handball in the box not a reviewable play because it's just too subjective. Like, the referee just has to look at it in real time and make the decision on the spot. Like, I just don't know if VAR is helping with this one.
Yeah, then you limit yourself.
Well, not necessarily. If you want to still use VAR for whether or not something is a dive, use it. I think it's been brilliant for offsides. That's huge.
Yeah.
What it's done for that, like we said in the Barcelona game. There are still moments when VAR has been fantastic, but this stuff with the handball is really becoming tedious.
And BT Sport, Rio Ferdinand, he had some things to say about those implementing VAR.
You need people in that box who are making decisions. Someone in there needs to have played the game, needs to understand football. These people that are making decisions at the moment, they don't seem to understand the game, because that is clear cut to me. Not a penalty.
Not a penalty is what he said there.
It is kind of clear cut. Now, his thing that you have to have played the game to understand that, I'm not sure I'm 100% on that, but I get his point. And also the slowing down, the countless reviews of it, I can make anything look like...
I think there should be some rule where if you can't tell after 1 minute, then that means it's not definitive. Like, because that's what it takes to overturn these things, right? Is something definitive. Well, then ideally you should be able to look at something right away if it's definitive, or at least a couple angles. 1 minute should be enough to look at a couple angles and then make your decision. If you don't know after a minute, then you're not going to know. Then it's not definitive and you stick with what was called on the field.
All I know is I can't have the game that we love watching, especially these great Champions League nights, descend into 10-minute conversations.
Well, I know, but let's not act like it ruined the game. Now, I guess if Aguero scores there, maybe we're having a different conversation. On the Manchester City side of things, Pochettino says they're still the favorite. I'm conflicted as to whether or not I agree or disagree with that. I think I would say it's totally up for grabs. I think Spurs needed to win this to give themselves a chance. Winning by a goal certainly helps them. No away goal for Manchester City is huge, but we've seen what City can do. I can't for the life of me imagine a game that Sané and De Bruyne don't play a bigger role in next time.
But why didn't they play?
I have no idea.
We have to get to this. And why bring them on in the 89th minute? Like, Trippier was gassed. He was out of juice. The fullbacks were, you know, Spurs have put so much emotional and physical intensity into this game. The last thing you want to see is De Bruyne and Sané coming off the bench with enough time to impact the game. Yeah. It never happened. Jack Pitbrook tweeted this. I don't think any of Pep's funny selections came off. Delph was poor. Mahrez was poor. They missed De Bruyne. They missed Sané. And they probably missed Stones too. Aguero didn't look fit. And we get to this point where we're talking about Pep Guardiola and we're talking about the overcomplication of football. And there's these two things going on at the moment. John Bruin tweeted this. Pep Guardiola thinks too much. Doesn't make him a bad person or manager, but he thinks too much. Like, has he over-egged his analysis of Spurs?
I think so. I really think you just hit on it. Because for me, I saw what Fernandinho said afterward. Because they played with two defensive midfielders. Usually Fernandinho patrols that by himself. But they put Gundogan next to Fernandinho and also a defensive midfielder role. And Fernandinho talked about it afterwards. And he said Spurs like to play through the middle. You know, get the ball to Eriksen and then bang, he picks out the next pass. They wanted to choke that off. And I'm reading that and I'm thinking, like, wow, you are really paying Tottenham a huge compliment. You're Manchester City.
This is
like
massive.
You're the favorite to win this competition. You don't conform to anybody. Other teams conform to you. I just like thought that was, I don't know, that just flew in the face of what I view Manchester City to be. Like, they're the dominant team. They play their game. I couldn't believe that they were conforming to what Tottenham wanted to do. That was really surprising to me.
Now, I know he made a mistake in the game, but is there part of Pep Guardiola that needs to listen to Fabian Delph and just go,
the basics of football.
The basics of the game.
Yeah.
Your best players should play in their best positions against opposition in games where you can really... I mean, if City go out there with a full side and hurt Spurs in the first leg, that's over. That's the tie effectively over. It was funny because when Bruin tweeted that, all I could think about was how deeply Pep thinks about the game and how he philosophizes over the game probably too much. And I don't think he'd be out of place in this Monty Python sketch, which is the German philosophers versus the Greek philosophers.
And there's Archimedes, and I think he's had an idea.
Eureka!
Archimedes out Socrates. Socrates back to Archimedes. Archimedes out to Heraclitus, he beats Hegel. Heraclitus, a little flick. Here he comes on the far post. Socrates is there. Socrates, and he's in. Socrates has scored. The Greeks are going mad. The Greeks are going mad. Socrates scores. The beautiful cross from Archimedes. The Germans are disputing it. Hegel is arguing that the reality is merely an a priori adjunct of non-naturalistic ethics. Kant, via the categorical imperative, is holding that ontologically exists only in the imagination. And Marx is claiming it was offside.
Did you ever see that sketch?
No.
That was the first
time. Not until you sent it to me.
Yeah. Oh, unbelievable. Incredible. And there's one talking footballer in the German team, Beckenbauer. Kant, Immanuel Kant, Hegel, Marx, there's Beckenbauer. And I think, obviously my mind works in weird ways, but when I hear about Pep thinking too much, I think about the basics of football from Delph, and I think about that sketch. Mm. I think he completely overthought the Spurs conundrum last night. Play your best team.
Totally agree. I wonder if this is a thing with him, because there is that stat out there now that he has not won a Champions League, Champions League away match in the quarterfinals or later since 2011?
Yeah. Real Madrid, I believe. So, I don't want to, because obviously the quarterfinals of a Champions League is tough. You know, you're meeting top class opposition. But last season against Liverpool, I thought he overthought that a little bit too. And Gundogan played, and when I saw Gundogan in the team, I thought, we can get at him. We can hurt them. And I mean, obviously the result against Liverpool in the first leg was much more paralyzing to City's ambitions than a 1-0 defeat to Spurs is. But still, I think he got it wrong again because he tried to complicate it.
Yeah. Let's see, JJ. And then there is the aforementioned Liverpool 2-0 over FC Porto, two first-half goals for the Reds.
Yes, it was a return to the kind of form of the Champions League last season, a performance that pretty much I could identify with as classic Liverpool from last year was very good. There was, if you're someone who subscribed to the view Porto are much better than last season, they're not. They really weren't. And I expected more from them. They created a few good chances.
Well, they did. And that was the only thing I would say is, yes, Liverpool were deserving winners. You'll get no argument from me on that. But good Lord. For the number of opportunities that Marega had to put one in the back of the net, I mean, he probably should have finished at least one of them.
Marega had some really good chances, and he came up very, very short for Porto, and that could have changed the tie. They tried to get your favourite, Tecatito, Jesus Corona, into the game more with long balls in behind Milner. Didn't work. I thought Milner had a fabulous game. He wasn't troubled by him at all, and that should not be the case. Naby Keita was excellent for Liverpool.
Yeah, Naby Keita has gone all this time without scoring, and now he's scored two in his last two. Here's what his opener sounded in this sounded like in this one.
Held up by Maxi Pereira, but it's come from Firmino, and here's Naby Keita deflected it in, and Liverpool are in front inside 5 minutes. Naby Keita, who scored his first goal for the club at Southampton on Friday night, has scored again.
He was bad though on Friday night. The midfield configuration on Friday night was Fabinho in the centre with Keita and Wijnaldum either side, Andrew. I cannot tell you how bad that was. It was disastrous. And you're looking at it and you're thinking, there's two summer signings in Keita and Fabinho. And you're just dismayed at the performance. And obviously we had to bring Henderson in off the bench. Now, it was different on a... last night, obviously, Henderson started in a kind of a little wider position. Fabinho played and Keita played. And that was actually a midfield that functioned very well. Keita had won eight tackles against Porto, which was the most by any player in a UEFA Champions League knockout match so far this season. Hmm. Which, I mean, winning tackles is part of his game, but also his running was much better, his burst into the box. It was the kind of Keita that we saw in glimpses in the opening day game against West Ham United.
Oh my God, remember the things we were saying about him after game?
And that, to be fair,
signing of the season.
Yeah, he got injured, fell away, and it hasn't really clicked. But that midfield seemed to suit him, and Liverpool were dominant. Now, someone tweeted at us, oh, well, it was only Porto. Yeah, but it was only Southampton on Friday night, and he looked terrible.
It's only, to say it was only Porto, yeah, I mean, do we know that they're not good?
It's it's the quarterfinal of the Champions League. Come on.
Porto might, yeah, they might be like a good team.
But solid result for Liverpool.
Can I ask you a random Liverpool question that I don't think I've asked you this season? Who's the most important player on this team?
Can I say it's split between two?
So you can say whatever you want. This is a totally open question.
I've long held the view that Bobby Firmino up front links that whole attack together, and I haven't changed on that. And I think Virgil van Dijk is probably the most important player. Defensively, stepping out with the ball. Andrew, some of his long passes are so elegant. I haven't seen anything as elegant since... I can't think of anything more elegant.
Wow, that was quite a comparison.
But I couldn't think of something. He's the way he passes the ball, the way he gets Liverpool on the front foot, his range of passing. He's like a centre midfielder at centre back.
Yeah. I don't think this would be my answer necessarily, but I will say they do feel different when Jordan Henderson is playing.
I know what you mean by that.
Like, I thought he was so good for them yesterday.
Yeah.
And I don't know, there's just something about like the way he links play with Firmino and that forward line. And like, it'll get to Henderson in kind of the middle of the park. And then you just, because of the speed of Salah and Mane down the wings or Firmino in the middle, like his ability to pick it out when he's playing the right ball, I don't know, I feel like that just changes things.
He is very cognizant of his role, which is to get that ball to that front three quickly. The ball he played for Salah for the second goal was excellent. He split the defence. You're right. And he was playing in a little bit of a different position, and he was excellent when he came on against Sunderland, and he scored. So, you're right.
By the way, I do want to say that the luck which has befallen Liverpool throughout the season has now permeated its way from the Premier League into the Champions League as well. And it's conclusive. God is a Liverpool fan. We're seeing
what's the luck you're talking about?
Well, we mentioned the Alexander Arnold,
the deflect, you know, that, the Keita deflection.
Also, that happened.
All right,
and for Mo Salah to not even get a yellow card for what was probably a red card offense in the 84th minute of that game.
It didn't.
These are the moments that change lives, they change legacies, they change history, quite frankly.
It didn't look great, but if you watch it in real time, there was no force or intent to hack the guy on his shin. His boot landed in a place. If you want to say,
why can't you just say he stepped on a man on the bottom of a man's leg?
He stepped on
a red card.
He stepped on the man's leg. He could easily have got a red for it. But what he was doing, but there was no the intention to actually do that. What he was trying to do was hold off the other guy and get across the top of the ball and keep the ball.
Does intention matter?
Not really. If you want to say he should have got a red card, I concur.
Here's
he should have got a red card.
Porto president Pinto da Costa said after the match.
Pinto would have something to say. Why
he
you?
Said Danilo should thank God because this is a leg breaker.
No,
not trying to kick
not,
the ball.
Actually.
I thank God he does not have a broken leg.
Yeah, okay.
It is a leg breaker.
Go back and watch it in real time. There wasn't the force to break a leg in it. He did not. That was not his intention. It was not a tackle as such. But if you want to say he should have got a red card, I'm fine with that.
I do. I do want to
say
that.
Right, well, then I agree with you. There we are.
I love when you just, you got your, because I can see.
You got your Liverpool panties on.
I can see the red peeking out of the side of your jeans.
Why are you looking at my jeans?
Because I want to know if you're wearing your Liverpool underpants, and you clearly are.
Can you stop being a pervert for 2 minutes?
I can only be this way. This is who I am, all right?
We do our soccer podcast?
I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very quick break. We have a mailbag of which I don't know any of the mail that we've received, so this should be interesting. A very big what to watch for, and I think you and I are both excited about our red cards and man of the matches.
Very excited.
There is still plenty to get to, so don't go anywhere.
Deeney. Oh, down he goes. Michael Oliver said penalty. A penalty in the 92nd minute for Watford. Such drama in the second semi-final. This goes in and we go to extra time. And in it goes. Deeney delivers in one of the big moments of a great Watford career. See what it means.
Oh my God, what scenes at Wembley over the weekend for that Wolves-Watford 3-2 extra time FA Cup semi-final. Wow.
Considering the damn squib on Saturday, Sunday's game was so good. It was a really great final, compelling.
Great goals too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, De La Feu comes on and like...
How does
God,
he?
There's some. He's such a confusing player. Is he awesome? Is he terrible?
Well, if you ask Graham Hunter, he's awful. If you ask the Watford fans, they love him.
I mean, that first, and then of course he scores the winner as well. But we'll talk a little bit more about that one in what to watch for, and in the final segment as well,
and in the mailbag. CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com, at CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, CaughtOffsideESPN on the Instagram. Go follow us there. Alexander Buford. With a proper football man yells at cloud. Luther Blissett. Jimenez will be embarrassed and putting on masks is disrespectful. You score your goals and you celebrate with your fans and teammates and that's where it should start and end. If you want to be a cartoon character, go and get another job. This is former Watford striker Luther Blissett, who you would think would have been absolutely just elated with his team going to Wembley. It would have brought back such memories of the days he went to Wembley with Watford. But no, he's cry-arsing about Jimenez and the mask. Your thoughts, Mr. Gunling, the floor is yours.
Well, I would say I'm not surprised that he would be feeling that way. He is a Watford fan. So even in his joy, he still probably has emotion from what he was feeling when he saw Jimenez score against his team in a semifinal and then do that. But look, I'll stand by the thing that I say all the time. If you want to play that kind of game, like, just remember, and I don't know if him and his, I'm sure he didn't mean it as any slight against Watford.
No,
I think he just thought it was
Mexican,
like a fun Mexican celebration.
Mexican wrestling mask.
But I don't know if Watford players looked at that and thought, wow, this guy was so confident he was going to score. He planted a prop behind that net. Okay. Like, just know when you do things like that, that's fine. Go ahead. Do it. But Watford sees this. And they're motivated. I'm sure they're motivated by it. They're human. And they came back and won. So just know, like, it's all out there for possibilities when you do stuff like that.
Yeah, look, would I encourage my teammate or tell him, hey, yeah, that's a cool idea? No, I don't. But I'm not going to get upset about it. I mean, Troy Deeney got super upset. He called him a loser afterwards. You know?
It's funny.
By the way, Facundo Sava started this in the Premier League.
Troy Deeney will say anything, by the way. I'm almost excited for when his career is over and he can go into TV, because like, I think he'll be so good at it.
Yeah. Columbus attendance. This is a lot.
I'm afraid to. Do we have to do this?
We've
angered an entire city.
No, we're going to put a pin in it now. The weekend was 65, 70 degrees in Columbus. It was a beautiful weekend. We had our man on site at Mapfre Stadium for Crew versus the Revs, Mark Marvini, and he was pretty disappointed with the crowd. He sent us a video. He sent us a picture. I was watching the game on ESPN Plus, where you can watch all MLS games. It was sparsely attended. There was large swathes open. There was the hardcore fans were always there.
Yeah,
there was an announced attendance of 10,942. Now, we took pelters because we discussed their attendance early in the season, in the second game, I believe. Oh, you can't talk about that. That's traditionally a cold weather game. Nobody turns up. Can't talk about that one. Then we talked about the one against against Atlanta. Can't talk about that one because there was a downpour. Yeah. And we were like, well, when can we talk about it? And I looked at the weather and I thought, this is a perfect time. The attendance was poor. Now, we're not trying to rile up Columbus fans or annoy them. We're just trying to report what's happening, considering this podcast gave plenty of time to the Save the Crew movement.
Right. We're only talking about it because it's something that is surprising
It
to
is
us.
Surprising
That's
to us.
That's all. We're not meaning to criticize. Like, there are fans there and they're diehards and we think you guys are great and I never wanted Columbus to leave. I hate relocation in sports. It's my least favorite element of American sports. We don't have to defend that stance. We've said this millions of times over the course of this podcast.
Yeah, we're just surprised.
We didn't want
the crew to move. We never looked for that.
Now look, you're talking about the weather and that's one element of this, but what about the other one that we talked about? Have we gotten a Columbus fan to tell us about the handover between ownership groups for these people that don't want to give Precourt their money?
Well,
because that one I'm also curious about.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Do I still want to keep going down this rabbit hole?
Well, we don't have to do it every week.
we can still
monitor it without talking about it every single week. I want to know when, like, I'm just curious.
By the way, in the interest of fairness, there was hardly anyone at Red Bull Arena for the Minnesota game. It was awful.
Like, oh, yeah.
If there was 5,000 people there, I'd be shocked. They announced.
Oh, my God, really?
Oh, it was brutal. Brutal.
5,000?
There was an announced attendance of 15,000, though.
Wow. What else you got?
Sticking with the MLS for a moment, we did our jump to conclusions last week. Mm-hmm. John Persinger, JJ and Andrew, first time, long time. Listening back to to last week's pod, you guys both seem to jump, make the boing noise.
Oh.
He wants the boing noise. Come on. On the DC bandwagon, are you guys still there after that loss to LAFC? Yes, I know they're the only unbeaten team, but it was a very bad performance. I watched the highlights of that game. Every single goal came from a DC United mistake. Now, there was great pressure, which Bob Bradley's LAFC can do, and they did press, but it was calamitous. Not to mention Rooney's red card.
Yeah.
But it was a terrible performance. And, of course, I blew hot air talking about how great the goalkeeper and the defense and the midfield was.
Well, for DC?
Yeah.
Well, they had been. I mean, up until that point, they had been. So
Andrew, this was a meltdown.
Yeah, and LAFC may very well be the best team in MLS.
Fair point.
So, yeah, it was embarrassing for DC United, and I don't even want to hear about Rooney's red card as an excuse. It happened in the 52nd minute. It was already 3-0 at that point. Game was probably already decided. No, I'm not going to come off DC United's stance just for one really bad loss early in the season against the best team in the league.
Marcos Paulo Serra, I have been listening to you guys since the World Cup group stage preview and absolutely love the podcast. Thank you. I rarely ever hear anything from the Italian league, though, which is unfortunate. Now, it is a fair point, but it's also because at the start of the season, I get all excited about Napoli, who are easily my favourite team in the Italian league, and Juventus are running away with it. But Marcos Paulo talks about the race for the Champions League. The race for that final Champions League spot is still tight. AC Milan holds that final Champions League spot right now with 52 points, but they are tied with Atalanta, who is sitting in fifth. Roma sits in sixth with just 1 point behind them. Lazio and Torino are sitting in seventh and eighth spot on 49 points. That is very, very close. Now,
it may be, part of this may be irrelevant. I don't know if you happen to see the news, but AC Milan are in some trouble. This is from BBC. AC Milan face a European ban over alleged financial fair play breaches 9 months after a previous suspension was overturned.
Oh.
So,
Yeah.
They could be in some deep.
But Marcos Paulo, I take your point. We do not talk enough about Italian football. But when the return of Gomorra, my favourite Italian crime drama, when that comes back, oh.
Too many fictional characters. I can't get behind something that I'm so keenly aware of already.
What a clown. Kayla Rockwell, I don't know if you all have Audible, but for the month of April you can download The Beautiful Game by Hannah Walker Brown, where she tells the story of Jeff Astill and CTE. It's a great listen. So Jeff Astill was the former West Brom and England striker who his body was exhumed after they believed, and he struggled with dementia and Alzheimer's, and they're trying to relate that to his career of heading a football.
Hmm.
And so that would be really interesting. There's a whole foundation that does a lot of research into this. Garrett Drum, I'm just wondering if you guys also have that weird feeling Liverpool is going to get it done from their true grit at the end of games.
Oh, they're winning the league. They'll probably win the Champions League too, and it'll probably be over Spurs in the final. That is my nightmare. Like, I would love
you quit the podcast, wouldn't you?
Like, now here's why I'm conflicted. If Tottenham wind up in the final of the Champions League, it means like I've probably experienced some of the greatest soccer moments of my life along the way.
Only for
but
me.
But it would all be wiped away if they wind up playing Liverpool in the final, and Liverpool obviously will win because Tottenham just S themselves every time they play Liverpool. I think the podcast will have to end. I really don't think I'll be able to continue. So that's what's at stake.
What a poor attitude you have.
Oh,
towards...
one of the worst.
Well,
a horrible attitude.
Finally, Bob Duggan. Oh, boy. I'd like to discuss some accidental sex education on your pod a little while ago.
Hmm?
I'm only writing now that the situation's been resolved. I thought you'd be interested in the tale. I listen to your podcast in the car often with my sons. There's your first mistake.
Not the missionary
thing. One day after pickup from school, we were listening, and one of you mentioned that 4-4-2... 4-4-2 is the missionary position of soccer formations. I heard this and took a quick look in the mirror to see my son's reactions, but it appeared that they weren't paying close attention and were reading books instead. Crisis averted and the need for the talk averted. Or so I thought. Hours later, my 9-year-old asks, "What's the missionary position?" I told him I was making dinner and would explain later, thus buying myself time and more than a little hoping he'd forget. To keep my wife from finding out I'd been exposing my sons to accidental sex education via sports journalism, I had to think of something to defuse the situation. I briefly considered lying. It's kind of like a false nine. Before imagining some coach someday asking my son to tell him his soccer position of choice, and my boy innocently, eagerly answering, missionary. I even considered some elaborate soccer historical scenario where Christian missionaries to South America and Africa bought Bibles and the back four to distant lands who knew nothing of Jesus or compact defense, but that too seemed to be more damaging than the alternative.
That is what I meant, for what it's worth.
So we've discussed an age-appropriate version of the truth a little earlier than expected. At 51, I'm still waiting for my dad to give me the talk, so at least I'm ahead on that score. Thanks, I think, gentlemen. Bob Duggan, P.S., sex ed aside, I do value the educational value of your show, especially when you discuss soccer's racism problems, so please keep up the good work.
I have long believed that this podcast was supposed to be equal parts football, equal parts sexual education.
You're in a terrible position to be talking about sexual education, though, let's be honest.
Why?
You're the least sexy man I've ever met.
You have us all ranked?
Oh my God, you are way at the bottom. You are not in any ways, I can't.
You don't even know what you just got yourself into.
I can't.
I'm showing up for the next podcast in leather pants.
Oh my God. I cannot imagine you, nor do I wish to.
Is that it?
That's it.
All right, at CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com on email. What to watch for, JJ? Premier League, Saturday, 12:30. Manchester United and West Ham. Don't really have a ton to say about that, to be honest. Sunday, 9:05, Crystal Palace and Manchester City. We spoke before about one half of the FA Cup semifinals. We didn't really touch on the other half, and that was Manchester City.
Because it was boring.
Yeah, it was quite dull. But they're in the FA Cup final, so the quad is on. Sunday, 11:30 a.m., Liverpool and Chelsea. We've talked a lot about Liverpool today. We haven't spoken very much about Chelsea. What, JJ, what about this?
Hazard. taking West Ham on and on. Astonishing, absolutely amazing, but typical of the man, a stroke of magic from a genius.
I think it goes into the list, not necessarily the goal of the season, but I think it is a nominee.
It's one of the great Premier League goals, isn't it? The way he slaloms by the defenders.
It's tremendous.
Now, you don't want really Mark Noble defending that, and you don't want Declan Rice out of position. And once he gets in the box, West Ham...
They're terrified of fouling him.
Exactly. But his balance is unbelievable. Just what a goal.
He's sensational, man. His name keeps coming up in these transfer rumors with Real Madrid. Most of that is his own doing.
This is going to be the summer of Hazard and possibly Pogba.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to listen to.
Chelsea, from what I was reading, have set a price of £1 million. Or £1 million. £100 million.
He's the first £1 million player.
Yeah, right. He's been transferred to like Leeds.
Trevor Francis.
But Maurizio Sarri says that is not enough, and I can understand why Sarri was saying
£1 million isn't enough,
or £100 million. I can understand why his manager would say that. He is basically carrying this team.
Well, when he's allowed to, when he plays, yeah. He certainly is.
Right now with Chelsea, the interesting thing, you look at this, the ruling on this upcoming transfer ban. This is like, it feels like their future, honestly, is hanging in the balance. I'm not trying to be overdramatic, but like, if you just look at their situation, you know, they could miss out on Champions League. If the ban is upheld, you know, then they aren't going to be able to replace Eden Hazard, who in my mind, I don't care what he says he's going to wait till the end of the season to make a decision. He's gone. He's going to Real Madrid. Every part of me believes that. Those are two hammer blows. I don't know. I would really worry about the next, like, what the ramifications of those two things happening if they miss out and can't make transfers, what that can mean for them going forward.
I keep saying this, I can't get away from the bigger picture. Where is the owner in all of this? Like, what is his involvement now that he can't get away?
Well, I don't understand. Is it good or bad for him to not really be involved?
How do you mean?
Well, you're asking where he is.
Yeah, well,
are you wanting him, like, people don't like Abramovich in the past because he can be too hands-on and he's changing managers all the time. Now we're not hearing anything, and I feel like people are like, where's the chairman in all this?
What's his commitment to the club is what I'm wondering. He's got his own problems.
But they can still conduct business. There's still like a football hierarchy in place that can make moves. And
do you not think if he was more hands-on, the rudder, Sarri would be gone at this point? Days gone by, it feels like that.
Yeah. That's a fair question. I don't know what the right move is. Like, should they have gotten rid of Sarri? Maybe it's a good thing. Like, we always talk about the importance of stability. You know, we'll talk about Everton in a sec, but like, look at them. You know, maybe Abramovich might have fired Marco Silva a couple months ago.
What kind of pressure is Pulisic under now as he comes into this club?
Especially if Hazard leaves, because fair or not, on the price tag that Pulisic came in with and the fact that there's a chance they're not going to be able to bring in any other signings, Chelsea fans are going to look to him and say, okay, it's your turn now.
Oh, boy.
Callum Hudson-Odoi, though, starting to play a little bit for Chelsea and playing well. And I imagine, again, especially if the ban is upheld, he's not going anywhere. So Bayern can probably back down.
Well, his people are really pushing the envelope with Chelsea. Like, if he doesn't play, we're out the door here.
And they should feel that way.
Absolutely.
Monday, 3 o'clock, Watford and Arsenal. We did talk before about Watford winning an FA Cup Classic over Wolves. I did want... we talked about De La Feu, his first goal. He also did this in extra time.
Maybe Watford's best opportunity in his first period of extra time. De La Feu, it's more than an opportunity. But 2-0 down. They lead 3-2. He's got two of the three. It's incredible.
My best friend from school back home in Ireland, his first cousin is Matt Doherty. So he just had a roller coaster of a ride of a Sunday. Just... They're good.
His first cousin.
His first cousin's Matt Doherty, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Mm.
Wow.
So he was he lives in Texas now, so he was texting me during the game. Not happy.
No, I can imagine. Oof. To be up 2-0 in the second half.
Thought Matt was going to the FA Cup final.
Oh, ouch. Let's see. Watford's opponent on Monday at 3 o'clock. Arsenal lost to Everton in a possible blow to their top four hopes. It's all still so close. You know, Liverpool are playing Chelsea, so what's going to happen there? Chelsea also still go to Old Trafford before the end of the season. Spurs still play Manchester City in the league. So there's still, like, even though we're at the end of the season, basically, it's impossible to tell how this is all going to shake out.
I've never felt at this point, it's a long time since I felt there's so much in the balance at this point in the season. There seems like months of football left.
Yeah.
And there really is. There's so much football left.
I know. And the one race that's usually the most undecided, relegation, is kind of the one race right now that, like, you sort of feel like is the most decided of the three. Did want to mention Everton, who Arsenal lost to. For all the praise we've given Wolves this season and all the criticism we've given Everton, Everton have actually won the same number of games as Wolves this year and have a better goal differential. Granted, Wolves have played one fewer games, but still.
It's worth noting, and our mutual friend, who is a massive Everton fan, I have not replied to him because I just didn't get a chance to, but I got an excited text.
Okay.
About how things seem to be coming together under Marco Silva and how the midfield seems to be beginning to click and things are on the turn a bit. So the pressure he was under, Andrew, but a month ago, it's important that this run of games has come together. And that
after that Newcastle game, it was like, maybe this is really not going to go the way we thought. But since then, they've won three in a row, two of which have been against Chelsea and Arsenal.
It's important he finishes the season positively and then gets into the summer and makes the necessary changes.
They're just 1 point back of seventh. So there is a chance still at qualifying for European football for them, which would be massive.
Yeah. Don't know if they want it. Don't know if
really?
They want it. Yeah, I don't know if they want it.
Well, can I? Why? Like, this is. I don't mean to sound condescending. I know I have a lot of Everton friends who listen to this, and I'm not trying to be condescending to your club.
But here comes some condescension.
Well, you say don't know if they want it because presumably that means it's distracting them from something in the league. Do you honestly think next season they'll be contending for a top four spot? I say no. And they're also good enough where relegation's obviously not a worry. So let them play in Europe, in the Europa League. For them, I think that would be great.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? What will it be keeping them from doing?
Surely the idea with Everton now is that they push into that, trying to get into that.
Well, no one's saying they can't do that, but, you know, maybe this is a laughable statement to make, but I would think playing in at least one European competition might help bring in some signings from around Europe.
But here's the thing. Your perception is carved out in the league, and you're traveling early doors in the Europa League to a lot of back, you know.
That's true, but
far away places that are hard to get to, and it's taxing.
By the way, I mean, their best road into the Champions League may be winning the Europa League. That may be more realistic for them.
I don't know.
If that's what this is about.
It feels like these teams with the money in the top six, there's a lot of just glass ceiling that's going to be very hard for them to break. We're beginning to see problems like mini leagues emerging in the Premier League now, and I don't know how healthy that is.
Let's see. MLS, JJ, Saturday. Let's see. Where do I want to start here? I think I put these out of order. Saturday, 4 o'clock, Seattle Sounders and Toronto FC. Going back to a kind of a throwback MLS Cup final rematch. This one in Seattle. 5 o'clock, Minnesota United FC and NYCFC. Minnesota's new stadium looks beautiful.
Which is strange.
Really nice.
It looks nice, and how ironic is it to have NYCFC coming in to play them when NYCFC's turf couldn't even stay on the ground at the weekend?
That is...
It looked terrible. It looked deadly dangerous.
I saw, who was it, Taylor Twelman? Somebody tweeted that it looked like there was a dead raccoon on the field, the way that, like, the turf kicked
up. The whole thing came up. But that grass, the turf that they're rolling down to cover the base path, is that what you call it?
Mm-hmm.
It looks as if it's dead itself. It's not, like, meshing in anymore.
I wonder if they thought at this point, that they, not only are they still there, but where is the hope of even moving? I know there's been a lot of talk, you know, whether it be out in Flushing, or there was talk of staying in the Bronx along the river. I don't know. I feel like it's all kind of gone quiet. I feel like they're like, get used to this. They're going to be playing at Yankee Stadium for a while.
It really does hurt them.
Not good.
And the fact the team isn't particularly good right now. There's a lot of pressure on Dome Torrent.
Saturday, 10:30 p.m., LA Galaxy and the Philadelphia Union. Here's a fan question for you, JJ. So the Galaxy last week played Vancouver. And Felipe Martins of Vancouver said... this when they were hosting LA.
There's a lot of buzz in the building tonight. You know about the star power with Ibrahimovic here. How much fun is this one to play in so far?
I think this is kind of sad because it's for him and should be for us. Yeah. Because we are playing home. Doesn't matter who come here. Gotta come to support us and cheer harder than ever for us, not for the opponent. I think that's the way we should be.
Totally agree with him.
I'm so with him. I wanted to hug him after he said this.
It's such a shame. It's such a shame. I remember when the Red Bulls used to play at Giant Stadium, and I went to see them one weekend. They were playing FC Dallas, and the place was, you know, there was about, what, 15,000 people there, whatever. The following week, it was Beckham and the Galaxy arriving, and because it was Beckham, the place was a full 75,000, and you thought, these are the early growing pains of a league, and this is the kind of thing that happens with star power. And it was all Beckham shirts.
I'm okay.
And Zlatan, it's still the same kind of thing. But
I'm okay with an increased number of people showing up because they want to see this guy. But that doesn't mean you have to cheer for him. Like I think
that's exactly what it means.
Even when I was a kid, it drove me crazy. We'd go to Sixers games when the Sixers were terrible, and you know, we had season tickets. I was lucky, and so you know, we would go when the Bulls came. See Michael Jordan, and it drove me nuts.
Yeah.
The number of Jordan jerseys in the stands in Philly. And
don't
forget.
People
cheering when he scored. I was like, what is wrong with all of you?
Don't forget, because he's never, like, Zlatan isn't tied to any one team in his career. Name the team that he's most associated with. You can't.
Inter.
I
don't know.
You can't really. He's a soccer everyman. And, like, his YouTube videos of his flicks and his tricks, he's not attached to anyone. Everyone owns Zlatan, and there's a cult of Zlatan. So it's easier for people to come into the stadium and just cheer for him, which is not
good. Vancouver has a great fan base.
Mm.
You know? I was so with Felipe when he said that. By the way, a horrible, horrible moment happened in this game. A truly sad moment of total embarrassment early on, second minute. Here was the call on TSN.
Look who's going to take it here. It's the newcomer, Ali Adnan, from the spot.
Well, that's a confident shout. A left fullback with the left foot up against David Bingham to put the Whitecaps in front inside 2 minutes. What a start this would be. Ali Adnan. Oh, he tried the Panenka, and it did not come off.
Panenka! Panenka!
Oh. Like, watching the highlight of it, it just gives you the most cringe feeling.
Oh, it's so bad. By the way,
what's he doing though? You're not the normal penalty taker.
You're a left back. Leather at home.
What are you, like, this is not the, is he trying to impress Zlatan? Cause it's like kind of a Zlatan.
Oh my God, I would hope not. By the way, Panenka's on turf. A solid surface like that where you can't really dig your foot into chip is just a bad idea. It was so weak.
Ali Adnan, for me, was dangerously close to receiving my red card, which leads us right into...
Red card.
Fortunately for him, there was one miss this week that was even worse, JJ.
Well played, Alves, and cuckoo! And Choupo-Moting has stopped it! Unbelievable! Choupo-Moting actually stopped that ball on the line!
Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting of PSG, you may remember him of Stoke City.
Yes.
He had a miss this past weekend for PSG against Strasbourg that I almost don't even know how to describe it. We just played the highlight there for you. I would just tell you, if you're listening to this podcast, you like soccer, so you probably have seen it already.
Most people have seen it.
Chris Wright at ESPN FC wrote this about it. He said, once in a while, an open goal miss so appalling comes along that it makes us reassess the entire genre to work out just where it sits on the historical ranking scale. And then it was in a poll of the top 10 worst misses of all time, and it was leading that poll. But some of that is recency bias, I think.
Up there with Ronnie Rosenthal and guys like that.
To make things worse, though, the game ended 2-2, preventing PSG from clinching the league on a title, which they would have done. Surely they'll still do that. But what if they don't? Like, let's just suspend reality for just a second and just pretend. Like, what if they actually, like, everything fell apart and they didn't? This goes down as just, like, one of the moments in the history of the sport. Now, again, they're going to clinch. Like, they're breezing to a title. It's such an inevitability. But they could have clinched the title. Now, the sad thing is, he did score in the game. He scored the opener for them in the 13th minute.
He doesn't need to touch it.
And by the way, but yeah, you know what? He could. Like, He could touch it. Who cares? Like, just score the goal. What, I don't even understand what he was trying to do.
He manages to get his foot ahead of the ball and hits it off the post and out.
It was simply one of the weirdest things I think I've ever seen.
People were asking why a Stoke striker who didn't do particularly well there ends up at PSG.
It's a fine question.
Well, let me explain. So he played at Mainz under Thomas Tuchel for a while. And last August, when obviously Stoke were relegated, they were looking to shed some payroll. At that same time, PSG were under investigation for financial fair play. So they had got rid of a load of players because they needed to balance the books and at least say, hey, we're doing it now.
Right.
So they couldn't, after getting rid of those players, have bought a £60 million striker.
So it fell to...
So the call went out and Choupo-Moting ended up there. That is the only plausible reason he's at the club.
What do you have for your red card?
What's the weirdest thing you saw in the Philadelphia Eagles celebration of their Super Bowl?
Oh, that's easy. Shortly after winning, a man notoriously ate horse poop.
Right. So we see weird things when fans are elated. They do weird stuff. They don't do stuff like this. So Racing, congratulations to them. This was just at the end of the March, start of April, so I'm a little bit late with this. But Racing are Argentina's champions. This is from CNN, though. Having only won two top flight titles since 1966, Sunday's draw against Tigre, which secured a third First Division crown this century, was a big deal for Racing Club. Tens of thousands of supporters took to the streets of Buenos Aires to commemorate the win, congregating at the city's Obelisk Monument, a famous meeting point for fans celebrating their team winning the Argentine League title. Such was the importance of the victory. In the case of one fan, not even death could stop him taking to the streets to celebrate. Not wanting a single member of his family to miss out on the historic victory, lifelong Racing fan Gabriel Arande exhumed his dead grandfather's skull and carried it around the streets of Buenos Aires to celebrate. Arande explained to TNT Sports that he takes the skull out of its tomb for good luck every time Racing play. Here is Arande sitting on the street with his grandfather's skull being interviewed by TNT Sports.
Sadly, that is much darker than what I was picturing, which was essentially the soccer version of Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah. How effed up is this?
That's... Yeah. No, you're right. That puts horse poop to shame.
By the way, when Spurs finally win the Premier League, and say you've... God, I hope it doesn't happen, but say you've passed on to your eternal reward, can I dig you up?
Oh, you think you'll still be alive?
Oh, yeah, I will.
Okay.
I'm like a cockroach. I'll survive anything.
Caught Offsides, man of the match.
Let's see, JJ. I'm going to go with Ben Foster. Throughout the season, Foster has been Watford's number one keeper. However, Aurelio Gomez has started for them during their FA Cup run. Gomez is 38 years old and has announced that he's going to retire at the end of the season. This cup run has clearly meant the world to him. He was in tears after Watford's quarterfinals win over Crystal Palace back in March. But with a trophy now on the line, it's unclear what Watford will do. Are they going to stick with Gomez and allow for his final game as a pro to be a cup final at Wembley, or are they going to go with the steadier option in Foster? Well, it appears that Ben Foster has taken the decision out of manager Javi Gracia's hands. He was quoted as saying that if he should be selected to play in the final, he will, quote, absolutely refuse. He continued by saying Gomez deserves it and should play without a doubt. He has never let this club down and never will. Class move by Ben Foster. Foster, by the way, is 36 in his own right and has never started an FA Cup final at Wembley. He did, however, start in goal for United in their League Cup final, a victory over Spurs in which he was actually named as the man of the match. By the way, the losing goalkeeper that night at Wembley for Tottenham was Aurelio Gomez.
Yeah, that's right.
So Ben Foster, class move.
Yeah, and Foster spoke about how after United won the league, they just went back to training. There was like nothing to celebrate. That was it. You've won the League Cup. That's it. There's more to be done, which will not be the case at Watford, I would imagine.
Oh, my God. Well, this is also the FA Cup. It's not the League Cup.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But if Watford won the League Cup, the celebration would be equally big. Man of the match for me is Troy Deeney, who spoke pretty positively about life after the FA Cup semi-final win over Watford.
What would be your message then to anyone that's thinking of giving up this game, that thinking the dreams can't happen?
Do you know what? It's not just this game. I'm going to go a little bit deeper. It's just life in general. There's always going to be setbacks. don't believe in Instagram when people go, oh, it's all real life, everything's easy, everyone's got bills, everyone's got heartache, everyone's got problems. So it's just one of them, and if you can continue the course and you can stay true to yourself, everything will be all right. And that's kind of what I do. I still make mistakes daily, and I'm still trying to be a better person, but personally, this moment is everything to me. I've got everyone that believes in me and everyone that trusts me here today, and I'm just happy.
I suppose the context to this is that Deeney served 3 months of a 10-month sentence, jail sentence in 2012, after kicking a student in the head in a street brawl. So he's kind of turned his life around, and now he's in, you know, the Premier League, and he's going to play in an FA Cup final. Now, I'm not sure that I believe in any of that, that if you just keep doing the right things, everything's going to be okay. But it is the way you should live your life, certainly. Yeah. There's no guarantees at the end of it. Troy gives us guarantees. He said everything's going to be fine. It may not be fine.
Right.
But
the message is what matters.
The message is what matters, and it was kind of nice to hear it. And it's so hard for me to square that with, you're a loser, Jimenez, for wearing that mask.
Well, he's emotional.
Yeah, I know you like Troy Deeney. You've always liked
him.
Well,
look, I don't want to make it sound like, what he did was awful.
It was.
And so I totally, I get the cloud that hangs over him in many people's minds. But things like that, and the second chance that he is, who knows which direction his life could have gone, and he's kind of taken this and tried to relay a positive message about what he's been through, and so
I think it's noteworthy.
Yeah. So there you go. Good shout. Both of us, man of the match, Watford. Big Watford show today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we didn't. Some people were looking for an emergency pod on Monday.
Tell them to relax, all right?
No.
We're here, we're doing it.
No, people were upset with you.
With me?
Yep.
You could have come in here, strolled on down here, and done a little podcast.
You would never let me go solo on this mission.
Well, I did a solo podcast once.
Yeah, but you wouldn't.
Brilliant. Personally, I thought it was probably the best one we've ever done.
You wouldn't let me do it, though.
Well, hey, this was a very fun show. Another fun show I do want to remind people about. We've been talking about it. I don't know if you've listened, but I'm going to tell you again. Laughter Permitted with Julie Foudy. Check it out.
They're going
new
to need
a podcast at ESPN, and it's doing very well from what I hear.
Oh yeah, they're going to need another permit for the laughter. There was so much laughter.
Really?
Yeah, they're going to have to apply for a permit because there's not enough space for all the laughter.
Julie's had on Jessica Mendoza so far, Mia Hamm, so it's good stuff.
Mia Hamm was quite an interesting one, as well as Mendoza.
Well, this was fun, man. Hey, I'm actually going to South Carolina.
Yeah, really? That's great.
This Saturday.
What for?
Well, it's Amanda's on spring break, and my parents wanted us all to, we've got a lot of good things happen. My sister's engaged. I don't think I've even said this.
Oh, to Captain Cardigan.
Does he wear cardigans?
I've seen him in one picture with a cardigan. So
and that's it now. He's labeled forever.
Yeah. Andrew's attractive sister is getting married.
You're an absolute animal. What a weird thing to say.
It's just
I can't even you sicken me. You honestly sicken me.
Are you mad with me?
You're a monster. You're a monster.
I can't help it.
Yeah, of course you can.
I just said it. It came out. She's a very nice girl. One of our early listeners.
Has she? I don't even know.
I think she listened to the first podcast.
And you just broke the mic.
Sorry.
You know what? We have to end this podcast before you just ruin our relationship and destroy Caught Offside Towers as an entity.
Are you that mad?
I've had it with you. I've had it. Well, hey, to you, I still say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.